QuiteTheThingMedia.com. The network, without constraints.
Hi everybody and welcome to part four of our six-part series on how to write a book. But before we get into it, again, going to ask you to visit wrongtermmemory.com or buymeacoffee.com/wrongtermmemory. Leave us a little tip so I can buy some cable ties, etc. But, Colin, how are you, mate?
I'm good. Really good. Still enjoying this, so well done, guys. It's been a good one to be part of, so very much looking forward to this one as well, because this one, what we're dealing with today, I've never written a book, but my day-to-day working life, I get this topic a lot, so I'm looking forward to hearing how Martin dealt with it during his process. So over to you, Martin. How are you?
I'm very well, boys. Thank you. It's been fun. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so we're going to cover dealing with blocks this episode, and a guy who, I don't know, maybe didn't deal with blocks and just wrote the next thing that came into his fucking head and just went mad was Dan Brown. Nearly 20 years ago now, the Da Vinci Code came out. The Jesus. Mystery. Yeah. Yeah, 2003 it was, the mystery thriller novel about secret sex and the struggle between fucking the Opus Dei and X, Y, and Z. It was all over the place, right? I'm going to just put it out there. At the time, I would have been, I'm really bad at this whole math thing, 18, 19. I got it out of the library and read it and quite enjoyed the story, I'll be honest with you. I can't particularly get behind the people saying about all the historical inaccuracies. It's a fucking piece of fiction. But my favourite thing to do is get Martin to read some of the reviews. So Martin, can you take us away with reviews about the Da Vinci Code, please?
Well, this is from some other authors, I guess, Salman Rushdie, called it a novel so bad that it gives bad a back name.
Oh, superb, man. I like that.
Good old Jody of the airport fiction fame. I don't understand the hype over such a poorly written novel. And as an author who does all our own research, I know better than to consider myself an expert in the field I am writing about.
See, again, that's... Is Dan Brown kidding on that he's an expert in papacy or whatever? I don't particularly get the dig. It's a work of fiction, so to dig it up for historical accuracies just seems a little bit gauche.
I think one of the issues is that the vast majority of his readership probably didn't have a good grounding of the actual facts and just took it all at face value, and I think that's where a lot of the criticisms came in, that right. It was putting something together as fact, and most of the readership, and this sounds really pretentious and horrible, didn't know any better. I think I didn't massively enjoy this book. I did read it, but I do appreciate the fact that it put books into a lot of hands it doesn't normally have them, which is a good thing. But I do think that's where that criticism mostly aimed at, in that it did sort of just serve up something that the vast majority of people just took at face value and didn't think more of.
One last review, Martin, from a linguistics expert, which I particularly enjoyed.
Yeah, Geoffrey Pullum. Brown's writing is not just bad, it is staggeringly, clumsily, thoughtlessly, and almost ingeniously bad. It's not a good book. It's not a well-written book.
She's an adventure story about this guy running about. Can you really take a... Maybe I'm just sticking up for it because I enjoyed it when I was a youngster, but that's my take.
It depends what you're looking at, and I think there's a couple of things at play from other authors, and when they set that tone, well, if Salman Rushdie thinks it's bad, I really should think it's bad, and so it sets a bit of a fashion, I guess. This is the narrative about this narrative. I think what they're really annoyed at is the success of it. What they're really annoyed at is that people think this is good. And it's probably because it's set against the classics, against theology, against, I guess, a serious backdrop, right? It's set against quite a kind of intellectual backdrop, perhaps, which is usually the domain of intellectual writers. If it was set maybe elsewhere, it could still have the pace of it could still give the good old adventure romp.
But I enjoyed the pace of it. That was the thing. I enjoyed that it was 190 chapters that were 3 or 4 pages long. You could just flick through it.
But I guess because it's set in this particular setting, there's maybe an expectation from some people that it should match the backdrop, that the standard of writing should match the gravitas of the subject matter. And I guess that's where they were let down. But I'm a bit confused. Literary criticism is a good thing. We should be able to take apart what's good and what's bad, and why it's good and why it's bad. But it kind of stops there. You don't have to read it again. And that's it. I mean, there's plenty of space out there for high art and low rent stuff. People just enjoy what they enjoy.
We've also got a one-star review, as we love on this show, for this book. The review is titled, "Another Good Reason to Avoid So-Called Bestsellers." I bought this book to see if it really was highly enjoyable and a mind-twisting riddle book, and so on. As I expected, I'm highly disappointed. Leaving aside the obvious misconceptions and the horrible errors about art in this art-based mystery, the story is pretty dumb. It does involve a desperate search in ancient castles for all Europe, and it ends without all the twists promised. I understood the main revelation as soon as the character bearing it was introduced. I swear the fame this book earned is only related to meddling with church business.
So that kind of covers what Martin was saying. That's why people get pissed off about it. I'm going to say it again. It's a work of fucking fiction. Who cares if fucking dragons turn up? Game of Thrones? Like, are people dissing that because it's got fucking dragons in it? No. That's,
well, they were by the end of the final season.
Yeah, I've not watched it all. I kind of turned it off, to be honest with you. But we're not here just to pan Dan Brown or stick up for him, in my case. I've actually read that one, Martin.
Yeah, it's not
hasn't gone on. Let's move on from that quickly. We're talking about dealing with blocks today. But before you block, Jack, Martin, how did that go for you? How many times did you come up against that wall, and what did you do to try and get through it?
A couple of small things, but you did go over those. I had a big block. For about a month, I didn't write a thing. Now, at this time I'm writing, I am moving house, but I am staying with my in-laws for 2 months because our house isn't ready. And that's, I think anyone would agree, a pretty stressful process. So lots of things going on, lots of plates being spun. I have a busy job, this isn't what I do. And I think I was just done. Now, I reached out at a decent pace. Again, I'm going from 50 down to 1. And I got to 24, and I was in my in-laws, and it was Rangers' first ever match, which is a game against Callander in 1872. Not a lot of detail about the tactical phases of play and what happened, a 0-0 draw, but clearly very important as a first step and the symbolism around it. My main problem was there was a book already written about the founders, the gallant pioneers. And there is the Founders Trail, a very popular bus tour going through Rangers' early history. I would also have to use some of the stuff there, the research that these guys had done, but I didn't know how to not just repeat the whole thing. And this is a really important chapter, and a combination of just, again, house move, stress with that, and I probably just a bit fatigue. But it manifested in this. I was in a train down to Birmingham. I wrote the title, you know, number 24, Rangers now, Callander now. And I broke my rule, actually, by starting without even thinking about what are you going to say that's different here? So I just shut my laptop off. That was late August. And I didn't type a word for 4 weeks. I was going to Ibrox for a game at the end of September. And it was a beautiful sunny day. I saw the main stand. Now, anyone who knows Ibrox Stadium, our main stand, is something that we're very proud of. It's very majestic. It's, you know, stood the test of time. It has a real class about it. Sometimes you take these things for granted. Sometimes just the glint of the weather or whatever, it does things to you. And I just remember thinking just how incredible this is, that the four boys in what's now Kelvin Grove Park were complaining to each other that this new craze of association football, they don't have a football team, why don't they start one? And out of that conversation, we have this. And that's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous when you start to think of it. And I instantly remembered a bit of Camus that I read at university about, you know, all great deeds and all great thoughts have a ridiculous beginning, all of them. Great works are often born in a street corner or in a restaurant's revolving door. In other words, these germs of these incredible ideas are completely diminished. Their origins are so humble from the final product. And I said, that's it. That's my thing. And I think I wrote the best chapter of the book, well, one of the best chapters in the book, the next day. And I was up and running again. And I didn't really stop. That was the pace of it. But I let myself rest. I spoke to my publisher in that month to say, look, this isn't going to be for Christmas. Look, don't worry about it. As it happens, we have that time in the schedule. But yeah, January, February, really, it needs to be no problem. I'll have it done by then. But here's where I am. I needed a break. And I needed to get that idea right. I could have written a chapter in that game. I could have whizzed through it, rehashed, reheated some of the great work that's been done by other writers. But it would have annoyed me to this day. And without even thinking, wasn't conscious. It was just that thing that happened that day. And away I went.
I suppose that kind of neatly joins together some of the advice that I've read online, basically. Or not advice. One of them is, were you in denial? Did you ever say to somebody, no, I'm fine, I don't have block? And then was there, I don't think there would have been with you, Martin, but was there that temptation to just write anything, basically, just to get over it?
Temptation is always there, or the feeling, and or I need to get moving on this. I'm going to let my publisher down for the kind of October, November kind of deadline. But I knew that I didn't want that. I don't think I was ever really in denial. I knew that I'd hit the buffers. Now, clearly, there comes a point where that becomes a serious problem. If you can't get going at all, then this book isn't going to happen. And I think if it'd go in a few more weeks, then I really would have tried to grind something out, because I'd be left with no choice, or I maybe left that and do what I didn't want to do, which was do things out of sequence. And I just kind of jumped on. But I knew that this would be in my head, that this is a really important, it's right in the middle of the book. It's such an emotional tie that fans have to this event, this game. I need to get it right. And I'm lucky enough, just that brief remembrance of something that I'd studied, 10 years before, whenever. And that became a chapter, and half the chapter is about that calendar game on Fleshers Hall, and half the chapter is about Camus and the ridiculousness of football itself, and that worked. It worked a treat. If you have too many of the blocks, then you might have structural issues. There might be a reason that those blocks exist, and you might have to go back to the start of that process. Is this actually an idea? Because if it's not, you might run out of those blocks more often than not. And you have to be honest with yourself. Anyone can type. Anyone. But that doesn't mean you've actually got a book there. You've not got a string of coherent thoughts and arguments and, you know, whatever else.
Martin, I think if I was in your position with this sort of thing, I would have been tempted to move on to the next game and to say, I'll come back to that one later. Tell me why you didn't do that, and why what I'm suggesting is probably the wrong thing to do.
In a lot of cases, Colin, it's absolutely sensible advice, because you do need to keep moving, or there'll be a feeling and an urgency that you need to keep moving. And people who are better at compartmentalising their thoughts would be able to do that. They would be able to park that. but I don't think I could write well enough with that still in my mind that I haven't solved this problem here. I haven't finished this, and therefore I'm not going to be given the concentration of other things. I'm not good at that. I'm not good at just, I'll forget about that and come back to it later, because it was annoying me. And then it was a case of just take a bit. I remember my publisher pretty much said, look, just don't worry about it. Just take, don't even think about writing for a while. And as it happened, I was literally moving house the next week. So things had maybe cleared on that score. So maybe there was just, it's just a block in the brain in general, just having to divert it to more serious things. Like, have we got a removal company? Have we got this and that? Is everything in place for this? Is the furniture coming at the right time? All this kind of stuff. And once that had been sorted, probably no coincidence that, ping, there's that idea, there's that link, and away we go.
Did you ever consider not asking me? Because, well, we know all about me not reading your book. But did you ever consider asking a mate, asking a friend for maybe not like what should I write here, but like a little bit of guidance or advice?
I would have come to that, but I was never overly stressed. I just knew that this wasn't happening, but it would. You know, I've written well for half a book. I'm not all of a sudden going to lose that power. So there was a confidence that I will think of something. Something will stick. And once we did the rest, I just needed a rest, Jack. I think that's really all. Mm-hmm. And my advice would be that sometimes you just need to listen. Otherwise, you will churn something out and it will read like it's been churned out. And what's the point?
Yeah, again, so I'm getting advice, Martin. So thanks.
No problem.
Colin, as always.
Yeah, great stuff. I'm looking forward to getting stuck in work tomorrow and then just thinking back on this conversation. So cheers.
Right, guys, we'll speak to you soon.
Browse only the best pods in the best network. Quite the thing media.com.